16 Minutes of Care is a podcast based on the CARE principles, a strategic framework that reveals how brands create impact by caring and, as a result, grow their business. In each episode, Isabel welcomes a company executive who explains how CARE has helped their business grow successfully and sustainably.
Matter is a Danish technology company that aims to make capital work better for people and for the planet. Their software solutions empower clients in the financial industry to better understand, act, and report on sustainability of investments. I'm very eager to learn more from Matter's co-founder, Emil Fulsang. Welcome, Emil.
Thanks, Isabel.
Great to have you back here. For the second episode, I would like to focus on the deeper part of CARE, which stands for collaboration, agility, reliability, empathy. And you apply this CARE first internally on your employees, clients, stakeholders, and then there's a separate part for CARE for the planet. We already talked about CARE for the planet. I would like to start with collaboration. How important is it for a startup to collaborate?
That's everything. Because when you're a startup, you face competition from those that already exist in the world that you're trying to get into. And that means you have to find out where you can do things differently and better, smarter, faster. And one of the very obvious ways is how you organize. The bigger an I think everyone who's been part of a big organization have asked themselves, why is this so difficult? Why is it taking so long? And collaboration in big organizations is people there are bright and very dedicated, but collaboration just becomes a little bit more difficult when you have a lot of people involved. When you're small, like a startup, you can collaborate in different ways, but you also depend a lot on collaboration. So if you don't get that right, you lose your ability to compete and build things in the right way, the right time, with the right speed. So it's really important for us that our colleagues are able to collaborate very efficiently.
I agree, and I have research on collaboration. Internal collaboration only scores 43% out of 100 because it's so difficult within corporations to collaborate. But you, for instance, as a Danish startup, you collaborate with huge institutes and famous institutes like Nasdaq.
Yes.
How?
External collaboration. Yeah, that's important as well. So we believe a lot in partnerships. We're small, so there are some things we could either try to build ourselves or collaborate with others on. And one of those is, this is a very focused on business strategy, but that is how to distribute. So how do you get your product in front of the people you want to see it? And when you're small in a very big world, having partners like Nasdaq, for example, or we've also partnered with the large French asset manager BNP Paribas, asset management on developing a data set around the UN Sustainable Development Goals. When we partner, it's either because we want someone to help us extend our reach and get further out in the world, and or because we depend on their insights and their feedback because they've been in the industry forever. So it's a combination of making sure we get out further out, but also that whatever we built and how we build it actually is fit for purpose, not just for serving the needs of the planet that we care a lot about, but also they have to serve the needs for the client, so we have to make sure we build things the right way. Partnering and collaborating with external parties is absolutely key in that.
Were they waiting for Danish financial startups when you knocked on their doors? Was it easy to open those doors?
Yeah, I don't think they were waiting specifically for a Danish startup, to be fair. But yes, I think it's fair to give a lot of these larger organizations some kudos for being quite open and curious about collaborating with new coming companies. We can obviously do some things that large established companies can't. Because of our size, we have some freedom to operate, we're building from scratch, we can move faster, all of that. And I believe we have a lot of really, really great people, but so do a lot of the big organizations. And I think they're learning that they can cover some ground and do things in a different way by collaborating with startups. So I would say, generally, we've seen a lot of interest from large organizations in collaborating with companies like us.
Ah, interesting. That's nice to hear. I would like to dive into the second shift, agility. It's about adapting yourself to the many and fast changes in society. And today there's a lot of talk about AI, artificial intelligence. You use artificial intelligence also in your product development. What's your opinion about AI?
How many hours do we have?
1 minute.
1 minute. Maybe I could say skeptical enthusiast. So I think it's, first off, it's very important. Normally you should say we should be very excited and enthusiastic, and we definitely should be. But I think more importantly, what we really need right now in the world is building a critical sense around what AI is and what it's not, what it can do, what it cannot, and also what it should do and should not do. And I think AI is amazing, and we deploy AI for some concrete tasks. So it can be, you know, infinitely more efficient than a human being at specific things where it makes sense to use artificial intelligence. Once you get into the realm of allowing it to make decisions, interpret, codify things that otherwise you would have humans translate for others, interpret for others, etc., that's where it gets complicated. And I think right now it feels like it's moving very fast. It's not very popular to say that we should regulate. It's also not very popular to say we shouldn't. But I think as a company using AI, we would be very, very happy and welcome any guidelines on it. We use it for specific tasks, but seeing the power of it, I am somewhat concerned of how big this can get and how little coordination there is right now of how we use it. Sort of, and when I say we, I mean any company right now adopting these different technologies that are going into this space.
Totally. Yeah, it's fascinating. I'm also curious to see what direction it will go. The R of care stands for reliability. I think in the financial world, it's very important to be trustworthy, to be a reliable source of information. But as we discussed in the first episode, there is a lot of greenwashing and there is a lot of information of investments that is just not visible and transparent to banks, to pension funds. How can the whole financial world become more reliable?
It's a very important question, and there are so many facets of it. So if we look at it from the angle that we're looking at it from, at Matter, sustainability, I think a key word is transparency. We talked about it before as well. It's very important for financial institutions to be transparent about what they do, what they don't, but also what they sell and what's in these products. And when I say products, I mean, for example, an investment fund. So you can think of that as a product, right? Today, I don't think it's because any bank has an interest in not being transparent. I think they've learned the lesson from the financial crisis and some of the relations to customers, etc., that transparency and openness is super important. But I think there's a lack of knowledge about how to do that, especially when it comes to sustainability. Financial products are often very complicated. So if you want to communicate to people who invest in them what they invest in and what that means sustainably, there's still not a super good gold standard. So you can use some labeling, but generally I think the key is really for financial institutions to work with showing more nuances and opening the otherwise fairly intransparent world that they're a part of up as much as they can. And that requires data, it requires solutions, it requires a lot of knowledge on their side.
Talking about the E of care, empathy, the tech world is not really considered to be very empathetic. When you look what happened recently in Silicon Valley, all the people that were laid off, the way that was done, the way those employees were treated, it could be done in a different way. How do you show empathy for your employees, for instance? Are you trying to do it better?
I would like to say we try to do it better. At least we haven't done what they did in Silicon Valley. But it's a complicated... I think that whole thing deserves maybe some reflection on how these companies are also being built. A lot of the tech companies, there's a lot of pressure on them to grow quickly. And then suddenly when the market changes, there's no more access to capital, then the conditions for being alive also changes. I'm not trying to come up with an excuse, but I'm probably more making a comment on the whole model we have for growth in our society pushes a lot for fast growth.
Is that still the model for the future?
That's a good question. I think in some areas, probably yes. If you think about green technologies, we need fast growth. We need very fast deployment. That comes with risk. So if no one's willing to deploy a lot of capital and take a lot of risk and move fast, develop new technologies, etc., it will go a little bit slower. That can be as something we agree to as a society and say we're comfortable moving slow here. But when we want to speed up, it's like the temperature increases. There's a risk of hiring too many people that you then have to fire, etc. Now, I'm making this comment about an area where I personally think we need to take risks and move fast, and that is sort of green tech and renewable energy. I think we could be more reflected on whether we need to build 1,000 Bitcoin startups in the same way or with the same ethos or go-to-market strategy at the same time and see them all first explode and then collapse. So, I mean, there is definitely a very important conversation to be had about where, how economic growth takes place, where it happens, and if it even makes sense. And a lot of criticism should be put on people who... I don't think it's fair to criticize people for taking a risk, but I think it's fair to criticize people for not considering those that get involved in it. So if that means employing a lot of people and then firing them, not because you're saving your company from going bankrupt, just because you want to, you know, brush up the numbers.
Cut costs.
Yeah. Then that's a thing we as a society are probably not very well off with. Yeah. But it's just to say, I think there are some nuances in that where sometimes it becomes a little too easy to just say, you know, investors that go for high returns and push companies to move fast, that all of that is necessarily bad. I think it can be very good, but it really depends on what those companies do. It shouldn't just be growth for growth, right?
That's true. You also work with investors, so you also have the need for capital.
Yes.
On the one hand, and on the other hand, the need to take care of your people. It's probably also sometimes a difficult balancing act.
100%. There's always a push to take risk. You also want to take risk yourself. If you believe you're doing something important, you can become overconfident. And I think as a founder in this space, I empathize a lot with the stories I hear about someone who grew something very big and then suddenly it collapsed. Of course not if there was fraud or if they were lying to people, but you can get blinded by the momentum and not realize that, you know, the carpet is being pulled under you.
Mm.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be to do with being a bad human. It can just mean that you might be a little bit of a bad manager or planner or capital allocator.
That's true. I just would like to talk a little bit more for Care for Employees. You need the brightest minds. You need very
yeah.
smart people. You need IT developers and software decoders and all of that. People that are wanted in any type of industry today. People that can start a job anywhere, anyhow, at any condition and any salary. How do you find them and how do you keep them?
I think find them in a lot of different ways. Obviously, that you can talk about the tactics of how to spot and find good talent. More broadly, how we find them is, I think we try to build something that they want to come to or be a part of. So we're too small to have a brand that people, you know, say, this is one of my top 10 wish list of places I want to work. But we can make sure that the moment we get in touch with brilliant people, we have something to offer that attracts them to the company. And that has to do with a mission. It's becoming very important. Obviously, that was my own reason for wanting to do this, to work with something that matters, no pun intended, to the world around you. It also has to do with the culture of the company. So making sure that you give people a chance to perform in an environment where there is a high pressure, but there is also a space to be something else than just an employee, meaning not overworking people, giving them meaningful tasks, etc., all of this. And then the retention side is an extension of all of that, making sure that there's still a purpose in what they do. There's a clear path to promotion. More importantly, a continuous sense of purpose, so that you don't just feel that you developing your professional skills, but that you also constantly feel that you're contributing to an agenda that's important. And that sounds very nice when I say it like this. It's actually super difficult to get right, because sometimes you get caught up in normal business stuff, which is, now we need to sell more. Yes, I know you want to do this thing, which we all like, and it's very focused on our mission, but we just need to get more stuff out the door. We definitely get caught up in that as well. So being interesting for our colleagues is very much about balancing all of those things at once, so it doesn't all become just top line focus or,
Final question, Emil. The CARE principles, it's striving to make a business strategy that is balanced between care for people, care for planet, and care for prosperity.
Yeah.
Instead of the old economical model, which is all about profit. You work with a lot of big corporations, your clients, the stakeholders you work with. Do you see the change, and do you believe we are going for that type of future? Or is that just wishful thinking?
Oh, there's a risk that this podcast ends up in a dark place. No, Isabel. I think, yes, definitely there are corporations out there where I sense that there is a growing need and sense of a need to feel like they are part of more than just being profit machines. And that is pressure coming from investors, but also their employees, right? What maybe concerns me is, I think we see those great stories and we have more and more of them, but if we look at the global economic system from above, that change is not happening fast enough. And that's not my opinion. I think that's a fact that most people will agree to. And the economic model we have created is giving a lot of power to corporations to create the change. That has a lot of advantages, but it also means that if they then don't act, nothing will happen, or very few things will happen. Government is not as much in the driving seat as it used to be. So I'd say, yes, I see a willingness to change, but I don't see it at a systematic and profound level or to an extent that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually concerns me a lot, because I think all of us can in our mind play out where this is going. What does it mean to live in a world that's 4 degrees warmer? I know Paris, for example, France has just officially started preparing for that scenario and admitted that we're not going to stay to 1.5 degree temperature increase. So I think the reality is that change is not happening fast enough, and we probably should start thinking more about adaptation, as it's called, to a world where the companies don't deliver what we need them to deliver in time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. So that was what I said. That's the disclaimer. It's a little bit of a dark place to end
it's
the conversation.
Okay. It's probably the reality. I will keep on preaching for more care for people and planet, and to place
important.
It in the core of the business strategy, because I'm still convinced that it's possible to change. But I agree with you, it
so
doesn't go fast enough. So we need more corporations and more companies and more organizations to focus on that. Thank you so much, Emil, for being here. And thank you so much for sharing all your great knowledge with us. For the people at home, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening, and take care.
Want to create lasting impact with your brand while feeding sustainable growth? Check out thecareprinciples.com and see how we can help you. 16 Minutes of Care is an independent production from Isabel Verstraeten, brand strategist, founder of The Care Principles, and author of the book, Does Your Brand Care? Help us reach more companies who are looking for caring and sustainable growth by giving this podcast all the stars it deserves and by sharing it in your network. Thank you, and take care.